Hello, good morning. My name is Edmund Sinanu Lochu. Welcome to Laudio. Today we are doing the law of taxation, and I want to give special credit to Dr. Benjamin Kumbo, Dr. Abdullah Ali Nachia, and William Kofi Osudimitia. Let's go straight to the general principles and background to the law of taxation in Ghana. Introduction. So, taxation as a concept. Let's begin. A precise definition of a tax has engendered debate among scholars, practitioners, and students for a long time. In our attempt to understand what constitutes a tax, one cannot help but pose the following questions. Are all forms of payments or contributions a person makes to the state taxes? B. What criteria can we use to determine the payments which are taxes and the ones which are not? Now, tax policy and lawmakers often worsen the situation when they find it convenient to say that some impositions are not taxes, when in fact these impositions or charges have the characteristics of a tax. Good example of such charges in Ghana are television license fees, ground rents and property rates, market and bridge tolls, vehicle licensing fees, among others. The International Tax Glossary defines a tax as a government levy that is not in return for specific benefit and is not imposed by way of a fine or penalty. Example, for non-compliance with the law, except in some cases where it corresponds to tax-related offenses. Now, the above definition informs us that even though a tax is a levy imposed by government, the taxpayer does not derive a specific benefit from paying the levy. This means that taxes collected by government are used to provide public or general services to the entire populace, and the kind of benefit a taxpayer receives from the government is usually not dependent on the quantum of taxes that taxpayer pays to that government. Now, the definition goes further to say that the rationale for imposing the levy is not to punish the taxpayer, although in some cases, the amount of tax imposed may be as a result of violation of a particular provision in a tax law. Thus, if a person commits a motor traffic offense and upon conviction for the crime, the person is required to pay a fine, the fine so paid to the state is not a tax. However, where a person fails to comply with the provisions of a tax law and the tax law requires that person to pay a penalty for non-compliance, that penalty paid for breach of the tax law may be regarded as a tax. Morse and Williams also observe that a tax has three characteristics, and it is a compulsory levy imposed by an organ of government for public purposes. The legal essence of this definition lies in compulsion. Law requires that the payment be made. The political essence lies in the public purposes for which the payments are made. The definition stated above provide us with the basic features or characteristics of a tax and thus offer us a benchmark which can be used to determine whether a particular levy or charge imposed by government constitutes a tax. Now, first case, in Development Data and Two Others and National Petroleum Authority and another, one of the reliefs of the plaintiffs sought from the High Court was a declaration that the ex-refinery differential component of the ex-refinery price announced by the first defendant on 5th June 2009 was unlawful. The plaintiffs argue that when the National Petroleum Authority announced the prices of petroleum products on 5th June 2009, the prices included an ex-refinery differential, and this component of the petroleum price buildup was inconsistent with the petroleum pricing formula published in the Gazette. The plaintiffs further submitted that the ex-refinery differential inserted by the National Petroleum Authority into the price of petroleum products had the characteristics of a tax. In challenging the arguments of the plaintiff, the defendant authority submitted that even though the ex-refinery differential was not part of the petroleum pricing formula, the authority had an element of discretion in matters relating to the application of the petroleum pricing formula to protect the interests of both the consumer and the petroleum service providers. and thus the authority had power to impose the ex-refinery differential. The trial judge, in upholding the arguments of the plaintiff, stated as follows: I agree with counsel for plaintiffs that the characteristics of the ex-refinery differential imposed by the National Petroleum Authority fits the characteristics of a tax. In theory and in practice, the ex-refinery differential is a tax. Some people hold the view that in order to define a tax, we must list all payments that are currently considered to be taxes in force in the country. The Revenue Administration Act 2016 appears to subscribe to the school of thought. Act 915 provides that for the purposes of the administration and collection of tax revenue, a tax means a duty, levy, charge, rate, fee, interest, penalty, or any other amount imposed by a tax law or to be collected by or paid to the Commissioner General under a tax law. This definition of a tax introduces an interesting dimension to the century-old debate on the definition of a tax. This definition limits a tax to only impositions made by a law or any amount to be collected by or paid to the Commissioner General under a tax law. A tax law is defined in the interpretation section of the Act to mean a law administered by the Ghana Revenue Authority, a law listed in the first schedule to the Ghana Revenue Authority Act 2009, and an international arrangement. So international arrangements are also taxes. From the definition of a tax provided in Act 915, it is reasonable to infer that any levy or charge imposed by, to be collected or paid under a law which does not satisfy the definition of a tax law as captured in the interpretation section of Act 915 is not a tax. A classic example of a levy which did not satisfy the definition of a tax under Act 915 was the repealed Luxury Levy Vehicle Act 2018, which imposed a luxury vehicle levy on certain classes of motor vehicles with a minimum engine capacity of 2,950 cubic capacity. The levy was payable by the owner of the motor vehicle on the date of the first registration of the motor vehicle and on or before the due date for the annual renewal of the roadworthy certificate of the motor vehicle. The Driver and Vehicle Licensing Authority, DVLA, was the body authorized to collect the levy, and the proceeds from the levy were supposed to be paid into a bank account opened for the purpose by the board of DVLA, with the approval of the Controller and Accountant General. Although this imposition was a levy, it was not a tax within the definition of Act 915 because it was not a law administered by the Ghana Revenue Authority or a law listed in the first schedule to the Ghana Revenue Authority Act 2009. Furthermore, the levy was neither collected by nor paid to the Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority under a... Another example is a tourism levy payable by a patron of tourism and of a tourism enterprise. The tourism levy is one of the sources of funds for the Tourism Development Fund, which is administered by the board of the Ghana Tourism Authority and the representative of the Controller and Accountant General. Let me take that again. The tourism levy is one of the sources of the funds for the Tourism Development Fund, which is administered by the board of the Ghana Tourism Authority and a representative of the Controller and Accountant General. Similarly, although this imposition is a levy, it was not a tax within the definition of Act 915 because it is not a law administered by the Ghana Revenue Authority or a law listed in the first schedule to the Ghana Revenue Authority Act 2009. Furthermore, the levy is neither collected by nor paid to the Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority under a tax law. In the light of the definition of a tax in Act 915, it is also reasonable to infer that market tolls and property rates collected by the Metropolitan, Municipal and District Assemblies in line with their bylaws do not qualify as taxes as far as the administration and collection of tax revenue in Ghana is concerned. Also, road and bridge tolls, television and vehicle licensing fees are not subsumable under taxes as far as the administration and collection of taxes are concerned. It is, however, submitted that, despite the attempt by Act 915 to demystify what constitutes a tax within the Ghanaian context, the definition provided in Act 915 does not bring closure to the debate on what constitutes a tax, since it does not answer the theoretical and conceptual questions on what a tax is. The authors believe that the important question that ought to engage the minds of all students of taxation is why do we need to impose taxes in the first place? The general view is that taxes are needed to provide public goods and services, and government must have the means by which to purchase them. In his dissenting judgment in the U.S. Supreme Court case of Compañía General de Tabacos de Filipinas and Collector of Internal Revenue, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. made an attempt to provide the essence of taxation when he said that taxes are what we pay for civilized society. In the view of the judge, the structures and systems which enable a civilized society to operate are established and maintained by taxes. For example, the police officers who are required to maintain law and order, members of the executive, legislature, judiciary, and independent bodies of the state are paid and resourced by the revenue generated by the state through taxation. Dr. Ali Nachia views taxation as the levying of compulsory contributions by public authorities having tax jurisdiction to defray the cost of their activities. Therefore, taxation is seen as the mechanism through which financial resources are raised for public expenditure. However, if resource mobilization is the essence of the tax, then one may ask, are there no other ways government could mobilize resources for public expenditure? An alternative way of raising such resources, as was done in earlier times, is through military draft or by borrowing money from either the domestic or international market. It is arguable that borrowing money is simply deferred taxation, since the principal and interest components of such borrowings will be repaid in the future from the tax revenue generated by the state. Taxation is also said to be a means by which a government implements decisions to transfer resources from the private sector to the public sector, and is a major instrument of social and economic policy. However, taxation goes beyond the function of raising revenue to finance public expenditure. Modern economists regard taxation not only as a basic source of national revenue, but also as a means of achieving the following economic objectives. A. As a means of stabilizing the economy. In times of unemployment, for example, corporate taxes could be reduced in a bid to increase the retained earnings of businesses so they can expand their operations and create jobs. This then will reduce unemployment in the economy, as the expectation is that with a reduction in corporate taxes, businesses will reinvest the increased retained earnings in the expansion of their operations, thereby leading to an increase in the demand for labor and thus reducing unemployment. B. For redistribution of wealth and income, or to reduce economic inequality. With a progressive tax system, those who earn high income pay more taxes than low income earners, and to this extent bridges the income gap. In addition, the tax revenue is used to provide for goods and services which the low income earners consume, thus resulting in the redistribution of wealth. C. Reallocation of resources. Tax incentives can be used to encourage the establishment of businesses across the country, thus leading to a reallocation of resources. For example, with a reduced corporate tax rate for manufacturing companies located outside regional capitals, with the exception of those in Tema, being 12.5% instead of the standard 25%, and corporate tax rate for manufacturing companies located in regional capitals, with the exception of those in Accra, being 18.75% instead of a standard 25%, it is expected that the manufacturing companies will take advantage of this and relocate into the low tax areas. As a deflationary device, D. As a deflationary device, or as a fiscal tool to control the volume of money in circulation and thereby control inflation. During periods of inflation, personal income taxes as well as corporate income taxes could be increased to reduce the purchasing power of consumers, thereby reducing the volume of purchases of goods and services. This will lead to a reduction in the pressure which causes prices to rise, thus controlling inflation. Allen observes that if the need for public revenue was the sole reason for imposing taxes, a benevolent government will borrow, and borrowing is likely to be inflationary. By raising revenue through the use of taxation instead of borrowing, government can keep inflation in check. E for influencing balance of payments. Now, taxation can be used to discourage imports and encourage exports, which promotes long-term growth. To discourage imports, duties on imported goods are increased, which invariably makes imports expensive, leading to a reduction in the demand for imported goods. This then translates into less demand for foreign currency to settle import bills, thus leading to an improvement in the balance of payments position. A reduction in taxes on inputs used in the production or manufacturing of export produce helps to make these exports competitive on the international market, leading to an increase in the volume of goods sold and foreign currency earned by the export country, thereby improving its balance of payments deficit. Now, let's go into the brief history of direct taxation in Ghana. When the Gold Coast separated from Sierra Leone in 1850, there was a need to increase domestic revenue to meet government expenditure, since the grants from the Colonial Office in London were inadequate. Various measures, including the poll tax, were adopted, but these measures did not prove adequate. At the time, the annual parliamentary grant was a meager amount of £4,000. Apart from the fact that grants from the Colonial Office were insufficient to meet the expenditure needs of the Gold Coast, the colony also faced an economic crisis as the price of cocoa, the backbone of the economy, had dropped to £30 per ton, and an amount of £800,000 was needed to balance the budget. Income tax was introduced in the Gold Coast for the first time in 1943. Prior to the introduction of an income tax in 1943, attempts were made in 1931 to introduce direct taxation, but this attempt was met with resistance. The bill which sought to introduce a tax in 1931 was opposed in the Legislative Council on the grounds that there could be no taxation without full electoral representation. However, by the early 1940s, the political situation had improved considerably with major constitutional changes in the offing. Representations from the constitutional reforms by the Joint Provincial Council had been forwarded to London with the governor's approval, and the Secretary of State was scheduled to visit the Gold Coast to discuss these reforms. Due to the improved economic and political atmosphere in the Gold Coast, there was little opposition to the income tax bill, and it was passed into law as the Income Tax Ordinance 1943 No. 27 Cap 27, as the ordinance was usually called. The Income Tax Ordinance was amended over the years and finally consolidated into the Income Tax Decree 1996 NLCD 78. This decree was further amended and consolidated into the Income Tax Decree 1975 SMCD 5, which was repealed by the Internal Revenue Act 2000 Act 592. The Internal Revenue Act 2000 Act 592 was repealed by the Income Tax 2015 Act 896. The Revenue Administration Act 2016 Act 915 provides a common set of laws for the administration of tax laws in the country. Following the merger of the three revenue collection agencies, which are the Internal Revenue Service, Value Added Tax Service, and the Customs Excise and Preventive Service, into one entity, the Ghana Revenue Authority, under the Ghana Revenue Authority Act 2009. Arthur Mills urges the Income Tax Ordinance urges that the Income Tax Ordinance was not based on the English Income Tax Act, which was enforced in the United Kingdom in 1943. The fact was that the Income Tax Ordinance was rather a carbon copy of an Income Tax Model Ordinance prepared in 1992 by an interdepartmental committee in the United Kingdom for use in the colonies. The committee, in its report, specifically stated that We have, as a rule, been guided by the principles underlying income tax legislation in the United Kingdom. And whenever we have departed from this standpoint, we have done so in the belief that the local conditions in the colonies call for other methods. Toby, commenting on the model ordinance, was of the view that it was unscrupulously omitted, it scrupulously omitted the complicated provisions of the United Kingdom legislation. There are important consolidations and modifications in the current Income Tax Act 2015 at 896 that one needs to take note of. Act 896 has consolidated and modified all the amendments to the Internal Revenue Act 2000 at 592. That's A. B. Capital gains tax that used to be in Chapter 2 of the Internal Revenue Act 2000, Act 592, has been modified and subsumed under business and investment income in Act 896. C. Gift tax that used to be in Chapter 3 of the Internal Revenue Act 2000, Act 592, has been modified and subsumed under Employment, Business and Investment Income, Act 896. And D, Act 896 also provides for the taxation of special industries such as petroleum operations, minerals and mining operations, financial institutions, and public, mutual, and non-profit courses. We'll leave it here and continue on the next topic with taxation as a legal concept. Have a good day. Thank you for listening.